Welcome to the Lost Dog Podcast and the Trans-Pyrenees Race number 2, supported by our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.
It's insane how this race covers like all seasons. Yeah. Oh, it's so hot. Yeah, and I have like a Polartec base layer. And I'm really lazy with stopping, so I'm always thinking, okay, just go.
The thing is, I never wake up so early. So for me, such a race is just a chance to see this landscape in like a different, from different perspective.
I'm Ian Broom, and this is the third of our daily podcasts from the Trans-Pyrenees Race. With things hotting up in both the mountains and on the leaderboard, I'm joined by TPR veterans Jim Stewart and Rachel Batt to take you through all the action. Hi Jim and Rach. As you know, I am sat outside a house, borrowing Wi-Fi high up a mountain. You've been keeping your eye on the race all day. What are your thoughts? Talk me through the highlights.
Okay, so it looks like it's been a stellar day weather-wise. And from what some of the riders are saying on social media, it's been pretty hot. I guess that's probably still top and tailed by a massive drop in temperatures in the morning and in the evenings because they're in the mountains and it's this time of year. It also sounds like they've been treated to some stunning Pyrenean sunsets and sunrises, and I understand that the race media have been enjoying that as well.
Okay, looking at the actual race then, so the leading group of about 8 riders from yesterday seem to have started to spread out a little more as they've got further into the race. But right at the front, it still looks really tight. James Loudon last night looked like he was going to be the first to hit CP5. But then he did something unexpected and deviated off the parkour to head to a hotel for some sleep. I think that, did that catch you guys out last night, Ian?
That did catch us out. Not me though, because I was talking to you. I stayed at the hotel and the other two, Thomas the photographer and David, drove off to try and make sure that they got James arriving at CP5. And then just as they arrived, they saw on the map that the dot had just drifted off slightly to the right and settled in for a little sleep.
Perfect. Just what you want at midnight or whatever it was last night. So as a consequence of that, then what sort of happened in the race was that Robert Muller was able to slip in to CP5 first. I think he got there around 2 a.m. And after a bit of rest, James and Neil Phillips both arrived pretty swiftly after one another. James first, then Neil, about 6:20 this morning for James, 6:45 for Neil. And as a consequence of sort of getting there first, that meant Robert was able to push on and hit this final parkour, the Raid Pyrenean, or loosely based on the Raid Pyrenean route, which is around 621 kilometres now back towards the start. So this really helps with kind of tracking the race, actually, because now they're all going to follow the same route. So you don't have that mix of different route choices to kind of keep track on as well as where people actually are. Robert hit that first, followed by James. And then Neil is really not very far behind at all. And given the experience that he's got, he's sort of my outside bet for the win, really, because I think he's probably riding a very savvy race. But the top five to reach CP5 were Robert Muller first, James Loudon second, Neil Phillips, then Alexander Kopp and Julien Brassard. And just to sort of touch on kind of leading riders, I guess, we're sort of sad to hear that last year's winner, Thomas Jacquelinet, had to scratch earlier, I think today rather than last night, due to illness, which is a shame for the race, but we hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, he'd said on day one that he was feeling ill. He was sick. The first huge climb, the Ispigay, and he was he said he was struggling then. So it's kind of no surprise Well, no surprise that it was, you know, continued to struggle. It's kind of, I imagine, quite difficult to recover from that so early on.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to push through illness, or Jim has anyway, and it's not really gone that well, has it, Jim?
I would say we've had mixed success. We've had cases where we started the race and I was ill, and we tried to push through and failed and had to withdraw from the event because I just made myself worse. And actually, on TPR last time, I had a cold, quite a bad cold at the start, and didn't think we were going to get very far, but thought we'd give it a go anyway. It was very wet to start off with, and that just made things worse. But then when we got over into Spain, it got really warm and sunny, and that seemed to do the trick. And so I came around from that and managed to kind of make my way through the race unscathed. But yeah, it's not the ideal thing to do, go and sort of ride your bike a really long way with very little sleep and really poor diet when you start the race ill.
Let's talk about the women's race. So Jana Kessenheimer is still out in front by quite some distance. Have you been keeping your eye on her and the other women too?
Yeah, so Jana Kessenheimer holds a comfortable lead in the women's field. And she also reached CP5 in ninth in the overall. So she's on the Raid Parkour now. And we imagine that she's going to be pushing to try and keep her top 10 place. But Simone Adair is still pushing hard in second place. She passed through CP4 this afternoon and CP5 this evening. And a little bit back behind her is Nicola Ray. She's the third woman on the road. She's also passed through CP4. And Ange Walker was the final woman to reach CP3 within the GC cutoff. So the GC cutoff for CP3 was at 2 p.m. this afternoon. And along with Lucy Hearn, those are the five riders that are left in the women's GC race.
Yeah, we caught up with Jana right on, well, not the start, about 20 kilometers into the long parkour, and she seemed great. She was absolutely powering up the hill. She seemed, we had a quick chat. She seemed absolutely fine. She was saying how hot it was as well, and talked about how over the course of 3 days that we'd had all seasons basically, and I guess that comes back to that what we talked about previously with the kind of the changeable weather. How do you prepare for like absolutely hammering it down with rain on day one, really cold in the middle of the night, and then you know it was only like 18 or 19 degrees, but it really did feel like a lot more. There was no wind, but yeah, she was going great guns. And the pairs race, how's the pairs race shaping up?
The pairs race has got really interesting over the last sort of 12 hours, I'd say. So Izzy and Innes still hold the lead. They've got quite a comfortable lead, actually. They took the gravel route into CP3, and they actually rode that in the dark last night, which is pretty impressive. I think they probably rode the entire thing at night. They covered the whole thing before sort of stopping overnight in Andorra in the hotel. Actually messaged Innes earlier to see what how he found it, and he said that he thought that the gravel was okay. It was bumpy but mostly rideable, but he did say that both of them are feeling pretty beaten up and bruised after having gone that way. So I think that Andorra stop was probably in the hotel was probably a good thing because that probably give them a bit more rest and recovery, but it'd be interesting to see how that sort of impacts their race going forward. But it looks like the mechanical issues that we were discussing yesterday for Stephen Dalton have they look to be have, to basically have put paid to his and Paul Williams' race entirely. And I've seen that Stephen has had to scratch, and on the tracker, Paul is also listed as DNF. He would be now out of category since he started as a pair. He couldn't continue solo and still get a finish. I don't know, and it sort of needs to be confirmed whether he's still riding or whether he is actually stopping as well. But it's a shame that the two of them, having come into the race with big ambitions to sort of put in a strong performance, have had to withdraw from the pairs category due to mechanical issues. But as a consequence of that, the pair in second place now are Stuart Dougal and Hugh Pelly, caps 149 A and B. They've got quite a bit of ground to make up on Izzy and Iz, but they've taken different routes towards CB4. So it'd be interesting to see how that unfolds over the next sort of, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours, because they're both quite close to CB4 now. But the race for third place in the pairs is where it's sort of at the minute, because there are two pairs that reached CP3 just before the cutoff. One took the road route and one took the gravel, and they both set off roughly the same time. So that shows that the two pairs covered the ground in kind of the same amount of time, despite the different route choices. So they're sort of fighting out for that third place and potentially higher up if they can catch the others out in front. But it's going to be interesting to see how they get on.
Yeah, it does seem to be. There were six pairs that set off, and yeah, it's really interesting to have spoken to some of them and like heard about the importance of the relationship and all the planning, particularly Paul and Stephen. I think Paul said on the on registration day that he never planned for anything so much in his life. So I imagine he's feeling pretty disappointed at the moment, which is a shame. But hopefully he can go on, and he is going on to kind of complete the route. But yeah, it's been really interesting watching the pairs have their own kind of battle. Scratches, though, we mentioned there one scratch. There are more. Could you take us through them?
So we mentioned Thomas Jacquelinet has scratched due to illness. We've also heard that Simon Goddard, cap 129, scratched due to a snapped mech hanger. Dominic Abdul, cap 39, has had to scratch due to a knee pain or injury, not something you want to be carrying on within a very hilly race. Sebastian Veit, cap 139, has scratched due to saddle sores, we're told. Tim Kappen, cap 26, has also scratched due to knee pain. And we've mentioned Stephen Dalton, cap 148, who's scratched because of mechanical issues with his bike. And we've also heard that Ian McNabb has scratched. That's cap 56. I don't have a reason for that one.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier there control point cutoffs. So every rider needs to reach the control points at a certain time, and all the times are different, obviously, for them to be able to carry on and be part of the GC. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works, perhaps, and maybe how it feels trying to reach those points, and maybe tactics if you have to change them in order to get there, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so... So the way that TPR works with race cutoffs is that, as you said, each checkpoint is assigned a time at which it closes. So particularly for the manned controls, the active controls in this race, there'll be volunteers that are there to take and record riders' times as they reach the checkpoint up until a certain point. And it's usually based on, it usually opens when the first rider arrives, whatever time that might be, and it closes at some set predetermined time based on the average speeds that are anticipated to be necessary to complete the race. So for CP3, the cutoff today was at 2 p.m. And that is adjusted slightly because in this case, we have different start waves. So if you started at 6:30 and other riders started at 6, it would be unfair to have a 2 p.m. cutoff. So for those who started later, they get the extra time depending on what their wave was. So yeah, to sort of manage that, for us, when we've been racing, that's been a big part of how we've structured our pace and our approach to the race. So we've always tried to make sure that we would hit the finish within the time frame and kind of work backwards to try and make sure that we're always going to hit each checkpoint, because not only do you need to reach the finish in time to be classified as GC, you also have to hit each checkpoint within the GC time as well. So it's possible that you have a mechanical and miss a checkpoint, but still make it to the finish before the final cutoff. And you would not be classified as GC because you didn't hit all the checkpoints, which is unfortunate, but part of the race. In this case, I think it's unlikely that will happen to too many people, but you never know. So I mean, what we've seen today is a steady stream of riders that have come through the checkpoint. And I think we've got 97 that have made it to CP3 compared to 121 that made it to CP1. So we've actually lost quite a few riders from the GC. That's not to say they haven't got plenty more to be racing for. It's just that they're no longer classified within that general classification. But sort of one of the, I think one example that demonstrates how you might approach trying to reach checkpoints is kind of routes. So particularly for CP3 and CPR number two, because you have the choice of the gravel or the road option, if you came into the race thinking that you would take the gravel, but found yourself maybe a little behind the pace you hoped you'd be at, and it was looking quite tight for time, you may wish to choose to switch your route to the road to try and speed things up and try and get there within the time frame. And that exactly that is what's happened to Angela Walker, Cap 11. So yesterday, I think on her social media, she posted a story saying how she didn't think she would make it in time now. She planned to do the gravel route and thought it would take her too long. But she pushed on into the night and found a campsite. And she was just kind of woken up in the night by some party revelers that returned to their tent in a bit of a state, made quite a noise and woke her up. So she sort of went off to go and get some water from the toilet block. And in there, she found another rider. And it turns out that they had a bit of a discussion about the race and their choices for the next section. And through a bit of encouragement from this fellow rider, she sort of had a bit of a morale boost and decided she'd give it a go. And off the back of that, she decided she would take the alternative option and go for the road. And I'm really pleased for her that it worked out and she made it to the checkpoint with 45 minutes to spare, I think. And something she probably wouldn't have done if she hadn't had that sort of mutual support and encouragement from another rider. But it just shows that if you tailor the way you choose to cover the ground, you can maybe make up time that you think you've already lost. And I guess that's one thing you need to take into general planning as you're on the race to hit these checkpoints.
So we've had, obviously, a few people have... quite a few people have missed control point three. I wonder if you could tell me, well, first of all, who they are, but a little bit also about how they might be feeling, and perhaps a little about what they do next.
Yeah, I mean, one example of somebody who didn't make the cutoff is Eleanor McDonough, Cap 41, which is a shame. She just missed the official CP closure. And she took the same tactic as Ange. She took the road route, despite making a tyre choice, which looked more like she would take the gravel. So it looks like she took the gamble. And unfortunately, it's not paid off. I imagine that she's probably feeling quite frustrated. But on the other hand, I mean, you don't know what people's personal targets for this sort of race are. Some people are quite philosophical about that sort of thing and are there for the adventure and would just push on anyway. I mean, I know that Jim and I have gone into events before and we went into one, a small one earlier this year, and when it became very apparent that in our case, I'm not saying this about Eleanor, but in our case, we weren't fit enough. We'd already decided pre-event, because we knew that if it didn't all go to plan and we didn't think that we were going to make it, then we'd just have a nice time riding our bikes. I mean, that's what we're all there for in the end. But it is disappointing. So I can understand as well if people decide that actually they don't want to carry on and maybe they've got other use for the holiday, like if they've taken holiday from work, for example, like all sorts of things come into play can come into play.
One of the things that I quite enjoy is seeing dots go off on their own in directions that no one else is going. And we've had a little bit of that. It seems that not just one dot, a couple of dots, maybe three, have gone north back into France to take a much faster road that will then lead them to CP4. Did you spot that too, Jim?
Yeah, so I thought that was quite interesting because that was that route that they've taken. They've gone through Llivia, which is a sort of enclave of Catalonia. It's completely surrounded by France, and they've headed towards the route that we took on TPR1 down towards Perpignan. And it is a fast road. It's pretty flat. It's quick because it's a good surface. So I can kind of see why that has been a choice people have made, but it's not something that I spotted prior to the race. It would never have occurred to me to do that. So we've seen some riders. I think the first one I saw that had done this was Andrew Brunton, Cap 5. And so he headed really close to Perpignan, kind of into the outskirts before looping back around and heading towards CP4 from the east. Another sort of notable example of people who've gone that way look to be Izzy and Innes, our leading pair. But there are now quite a few riders that are taking that same choice, which is really interesting. And looking at how it's kind of unfolded, I think I watched the replay of the dots on Follow My Challenge, and I could see that Andrew was in a similar position to another rider, Callum James, Cap 25, when the two took their different choices. And actually, for Andrew, it's probably not paid off in terms of time because Callum ended up getting to CP4 first. But there are a few other factors involved in that, potentially resting and that kind of thing. But it's interesting to see that there wasn't a huge difference in it. But what Andrew has gained is that whilst he's been a bit further, he has less climbing in his legs now. And when you've got such a lot of climbing to do on the next section of the race, perhaps that's going to be pretty important going forwards.
What are you looking forward to tomorrow? Can you see anything particularly of interest that you are going to keep your eye out for, maybe at the fronts, but also certainly in the pairs and the women's race? What are you looking for?
Tomorrow we should see the mid-pack and the tail end of the GC reach the coast. If not in the early late tonight or in the early hours. And then everybody turns that corner and heads off over in a bit of what they will think of as flat respite before hitting the raid route. And I'm looking forward to seeing riders get on the raid route, partly because it's fixed route, so you can keep an eye on where the riders are and you can see easily when they're leapfrogging each other. You can see little groups forming and the sort of little battles that are going on for position at different parts of the race. In the ladies' race, it'll be interesting to see if Simone Adair can catch up to Jana in the hills, although I've heard that Jana's a bit of a monster climber. So I don't know if that'll be the case, although I think Simone's pretty good too. But yeah, it'll be interesting in the women's race to see if any of them can close those gaps. At the front of the race, it's going to be really interesting to see if the riders behind Robert can catch him. I think they've all had some sleep now, so sleep may not come into it. And it's truly just going to be a race on a fixed route through the mountains. So it really will be interesting to see how it unfolds.
You can't ask for more than that, can you?
No.
Okay, let's leave it there. I shall speak to you both tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good day in the mountains.
Yeah, enjoy.
If you have any questions you'd like us to tackle, send them to tpr@transcontinental.cc and make sure you follow the TPR2 hashtag on Instagram and updates from our social media channels. Thank you to our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.